Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/truetransparencypricing. Happy you'll be if the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
104.5 The Zone's nonstop sports talk continues.
Coming up on the Midday 180, the Titans lose. Mariota benched. The offense shutouts. Did Derek Mason seal his fate with Vandy's loss to UNLV? And Tennessee gets a win against Mississippi State. The Midday 180 starts now.
From 104.5 The Zone, this is the Midday 180, served up by Wendy's. With Jonathan Hutton, Chad Withrow, and Paul Kuharski.
Yesterday's game in Denver, more of the same. An offense that lacked any sign of life or pulse. A group going through the motions. Marcus Mariota flat, the offense zero rhythm, and trailing 13-0. Mike Vrabel benched a bad Mariota for Ryan Tannehill late in the third quarter, but no points. More of the same. Solid defense. A defense that could be legitimately great. And it's a shame it's being wasted away by an embarrassing offensive product. Welcome to the Midday 180, served up by Wendy's, home of the $5 Biggie Bag. The crew is all here. We are back from Denver with plenty to dive into. Plus, there's more horrible football being played on West End. Vanderbilt loses to UNLV. But the Vols win over the Bulldogs. Phone lines open, 615-737-1045, our number. Guys, what's up?
There's just a few things to discuss today.
Just a few.
On the show.
I was so eager to get back that I didn't put any gas in my rental car. The needle really didn't move.
It's fine.
I don't kind of like the good. Offense yesterday.
Yeah, it's a lot like that.
Paul, it was.
I would like to say it's been a while since we've seen bad offense, but here we go again.
Guys, I can't do anything.
You guys were there, so I clearly want to hear what you're thinking about this. In terms of a television product, let me just give you my perspective watching this whole game. Righteous Gemstones was great. Haven't gotten the Succession finale yet, which I will tonight. I watched El Camino. I've got 30 minutes left. I've got some takes on that. All far more enjoyable than what we saw yesterday on TV. I don't know that I've ever had a worse time watching a Titans team. And I'm including a 59-0 loss in the snow because at least there was snow to watch and a great Patriots offense. That was a miserable Broncos offense. It was a good effort by the Titans defense. Every week has been a good effort by the Titans defense. That Titans offense is so far beyond inexcusable in today's football in the NFL with the rules set up the way they are. That was pathetic in every way. So bad I lost interest. I'm watching the television screen. It's one of those games you're just waiting for the clock to run out.
Yeah.
You're hoping the game ends because you know nothing's going to happen for
Hutton's
the Titans.
On the air losing it just like that. I mean, he's got the hardest job of all of us. I mean, but at least he's active, so he can only lose so much interest.
You wanted to just tell the story of the game, but the story of the game could be written in halftime.
Yeah. I forgot my binoculars on this trip, which on the one hand was bad, but on the other hand was probably good. I don't know. I was trying to put a positive spin on it. I just, look, 3 games ago, they had what we thought was a breakout effort in Atlanta offensively, right? Particularly A.J. Brown and Corey Davis were terrific. Now, look, I'm not naive enough not to factor in the fact that the Bills and the Broncos have superior defenses to Atlanta, but still. Right? Still, that's something to grow on, right? Hey, look, A.J. Brown, explosive. Corey Davis shines. You know what they've done since those games? A.J. Brown has 4 catches for 50 yards in 2 games since then. Corey Davis has 5 catches for 64 yards. Here's what happens. I mean, first off, they run into good defenses, sure. But the Bills and the Broncos see the Atlanta film and they say, well, we're not going to let those receivers beat us in the same way. And they do something. And then the Titans' counter move is to do nothing. Yesterday, They were hell-bent on stopping Derrick Henry, right? Everybody targets. What's the first thing we've got to do to beat the Titans? Right now, for most teams, it's stop Derrick Henry. There was one snap where Teron Davenport and I looked at each other. We were talking about it, and the safeties were creeping in. And at the snap, every player on the Broncos was within 6 yards of the line of scrimmage. Now, this is largely because they said, well, if Marcus Mariota can't throw a screen, he sure as hell can't complete anything over the top of us. How many DBs did they have down yesterday, Denver?
Three of their top four were out.
Yeah, three of four quarters.
Three of their top four DBs are down. I think this is the second time this year.
We're talking corners. We're not talking a mashup of safety corner. Three of their top four corners were out for the
game. Cody Sensabaugh joined their roster last week and was active.
Cody Sensabaugh!
You could get by more on like, oh, it's two safeties and one corner or two. I mean, that's awful.
Now, the quarterback play was horrific. Horrific. But I will say, there were times where he did not have open receivers, which is sinful given the fact that you're seeing third, fourth, fifth string cornerbacks on the field. Marcus Mariota yesterday played like a nervous kid fresh out of college whose arm locked up as he threw a screen pass. If you cannot complete a basic screen pass, which is not much further from me to Chad, the low ball to Delanie Walker, I mean, his accuracy, he admitted, was the start of the domino effect that got him pulled from that game, and he deserved it. Hutton and I were texting at halftime. I tweeted at halftime, I'm finally ready to say they need to flip it to Tannehill here. I mean, that first half was some of the worst, and we've seen some bad quarterback play here. I mean, we could run through the names. We watched Mettenberger not participate in a win in 10 times that he was on the field.
Matt Mock started a game for this organization.
And your buddy loved it. Loved it. It gave Matt Mock street cred to be a weekly guest on his show.
Matt Mock was a very nice guy, I will say. Sat with him at an SEC championship game one time.
But this level of quarterbacking in the fifth season, I mean, you want to talk about nails in the coffin. And then he just stands up there and he's so defeated. It's almost like you got to be sympathetic because it just like, you feel like if you ask something tough, he'll just fall over.
Watching his press conference back, it looked like a guy, he looked like he played.
Yeah, exactly.
That
he's a broken man right now.
His reaction at the podium was exactly his performance in the game.
And, you know, a lot of people, because of what happened to Jake Locker, because of his body language and stuff, I get asked this too much. Like, you think he might just retire? I don't think he's retiring. I think he'll find a decent job. But yesterday he looked like a guy.
Who knows?
I wouldn't dismiss the.
Yesterday he looked like a guy that if he could go home and play with his dogs that John Glennon wrote about it being his thing now and watch Stranger Things, he would happily go home and play with his dogs and watch Stranger Things.
And he's made enough money to do that, if that's what he chooses to do.
I mean, now, today.
Oh, yeah, that'd be tough. Call it a season. It's just, it's every facet, right? It's the quarterback looking confused, like he's not seeing things properly from the beginning of the game on. We've talked a lot about you can tell with Mariota when he's feeling it, when he's seeing it early. You could tell very early in this game he wasn't seeing anything. It's having to protect with six guys or seven guys and have two guys out in the formation running a route, not getting open. It's even when you have more guys in running routes, not getting open at times. It's just every single play, it's something different that's a complete offensive failure. And that's where Mariota sucked. The offensive line sucked. The receiver sucked. Derrick Henry did the best that he could with no blocking, I thought. I mean, he had no real shot because the nature of the game, too. It was just miserable. And look, Arthur Smith looks terrible right now. And we all like Arthur Smith. And it's a great story. And he worked his way through the system, and he did it the right way, and he slowly worked his way up, and he's getting his shot now. And that offense, it looks completely inept. And I can't tell if it's more Arthur Smith or more the fact that your highly paid offensive line you've dedicated so many resources to is just terrible. I mean, you can't call plays with an offensive line that can't block a guy for a second and a half. You just can't do that at any level of football. So I'm somewhat sympathetic to Arthur Smith also. And I'm somewhat sympathetic to Marcus Mariota because there are times where he has no chance. Now, there are other times where he's holding it way too long.
Yesterday, I didn't feel like the pass rush was
it wasn't great.
He was sacked three times.
Yeah.
They saved four for Tannehill.
But one of those sacks that they're counting is where Mariota gets back to the line of scrimmage where he tucks and runs. And there was another one in the first half that was Mariota moving out of the pocket as well.
He was not under fire.
Not the way
he's been
way.
In some other games. It wasn't as big a factor.
The O-line still sucks, Jeff, to your point.
Yeah. But you kind of see what I'm saying. It was almost every play you could point the finger at something different.
Oh, absolutely.
And it was just
most of the time you could point it at him.
Everyone was working in concert, and it was bad. Look, I'm not letting Mariota off the hook. He's really bad, and he looks defeated. And I know we're going to talk about the quarterback situation in quotations now.
Yeah.
Don't know that there really is a situation at this point. So we'll discuss that. But, it's just a miserable day for the Titans.
How about this? 5 out of 9 drives that didn't end from halftime or a turnover. They gained fewer than 10 yards.
That's not good. The drive charts they put up there were just depressing.
And the defense, they're wasting.
Punt. Interception, punt.
The defense, they're wasting.
Three receivers on the right side. Broncos confused in coverage. Now they're set as Tannehill goes to throw it. Under pressure, he has time. He guns it towards the end zone. It's intercepted. Jackson has it at the 10. He gets away to the 15, cuts back to the 20. And is taken down across the 25-yard line. The Broncos are going to record a shutout today.
Hello, let me tell you what it's like to be a zero. Let me show you what it's like to always feel. Like I'm empty and there's nothing really real. I'm looking for a way.
Midday 180 served up by Wendy's. Up with the $5 biggie bag. Phone lines are loaded as we go to the phones. You can grab a line at 615-737-1045. The Titans have allowed 92 points, allowing under 20 points in every game, and they're 2-4. Teams in the league, Mike Keith ended the broadcast yesterday with this. Teams in the league allowing less than 20 points in the game, entering week 5, won 79% of the time. The Titans are 2-4. That's what they're wasting.
I was thinking about this yesterday during that game. What do we even talk to Logan Ryan about at this point? Like their part's doing fine. But like everything we're going to ask him about, and we're going to ask the necessary questions, but it's going to be about a side of the ball he has no impact on. So
they're losing because of everything but the defense.
I sympathize with those defensive guys. And I know, Paul, you've talked about, well, they need to get in their face and do this and that. They may be doing that, but if they go public, they're still not going to win with that approach.
I mean, I don't think they're not getting in people's faces like that. I mean, I don't think you do that at the NFL level to that, you know, that.
Well, this is a damn good test case.
I don't see that
happening. Something's got to happen, right? Different has to happen. I don't know what it is. That's the obvious thing that comes up.
Quarterback's going to happen.
Right, quarterback's going to happen. But Ryan Tannehill
has
a personality. It's not dissimilar.
The heads are going to roll on the offensive line. Keith Carter's going to lose his job, or someone starting is going to be benched.
Now you're talking about stuff that's after the season. Keith Carter's not going to. You think Keith Carter's going to lose his job now?
Have you seen this line?
Yeah, I've seen it. And Mike Sullivan, I'd be fine with the Mike Sullivan takeover, but I don't know that.
About to sit here and say that it's all on Keith Carter.
Oh, I'm not either.
But someone will lose their job over this, and it will be him. That line is terrible.
No, it's absolutely.
And for the money invested, heads will roll.
And I wrote this morning, I mean, I don't think Amy Adams Strunk is a meddler by any means, but it would have been completely appropriate for her this morning to have a meeting in her office, or if she's in Waller, Texas, to have a conference call with Mike Vrabel and John Robinson and say, we invested a lot of money in the offense. We invested a lot of draft capital in the offense. Help me understand what's going on with the offense. I'd love to hear what they would say to her in those circumstances. But, I mean, we keep hearing about fixing, and we don't hear anything about fixed.
Yeah, agreed.
And I'll certainly ask that question today. I'm looking at last season. You know, they were 3-4, you know, was their low moment after they lost to the Chargers. They were never two behind 500 as they chased, you know. And I was looking, I'm not a silver linings guy by any means, but they got shut out by Baltimore in that 21-0 game with 11 sacks.
A lot of similarities in yesterday's game. Same week, same quarterback.
Right. And so a couple weeks later, they beat Dallas and New England back-to-back. And they found some spark. Now, there was a bye.
Yeah, there's a bye week after the Chargers game in London.
Yeah. But they were never two behind 500 chasing the way they're chasing now. We talk all the time about how hard it is to chase. And they got some chasing to do now. And they've only got 7 games left in the AFC. And they're 1-3.
Yeah. And with the schedule coming up, where it doesn't look like,
they're 1-4.
They're 1-4.
1-4.
And it doesn't look like there's much hope on the horizon. Now, we would have said that
and
last year too.
They're 1-12 against the Chargers. Now that dates back to 1993.
The difference
and they won
in last
3
year to
games
this year
ago,
from the start is
they don't beat the Chargers.
They started out and they gave themselves a little cushion to where they could have a 2-game skid and still be around 500.
Because they're
not the case anymore. Let's go to Lou. What's up, Lou?
Hey, guys. I am just totally, totally done with Marcus. If they put him back on the field, I will just turn the television on. The thing that bothers me is that this isn't really a tremendous amount different than he's been in the past. He hasn't scored any points. I mean, the last year, we went like 7 weeks with scoring less than a touchdown or a touchdown a game. So I'm just done with him. I feel bad for the guy because he's a nice kid, and he should, you know, maybe there's an offense that will work for him somewhere. But he is not accurate at baseline. They don't even pretend to throw the ball down the field. So I'm just done with him. The offensive line, you know, it wasn't so long ago that this offensive line was considered one of the best in the league. And is that all Russ Grimm, or is that, you know,
2016
tremendously different players? And so I don't know what they need to do there, but obviously, you know, an intervention needs to happen with the offensive line, because it seems like they have some of the parts. Obviously, the big part was Marcus not functioning well, but the offensive line needs some kind of something. I don't know what you do in midseason to fix that. But besides bringing somebody else in or something like that, I don't know. But
bringing somebody else in player-wise?
No, I'm talking about coach-wise. Somebody who can have a fundamental change in what they're doing.
I just don't see where this coach from the outside sits. Like Howard Mudd just left the Colts.
Russ Grimm is available.
Russ Grimm's in bad health.
I'm just saying like that. Those coaches that you're saying like, for advisor roles are out there. You don't have to bring them in to be the coach. That's a group that could use some advising. I know that.
It needs more than advising.
Here's what I know is not the solution. To sit here and say, you know what, they can't do anything because the status quo is just, that is what it is.
They've got to find a way to do something.
That's not good enough.
They've got to find a way to do something, but let's keep hopes realistic. Like if people think they're firing Keith Carter and a Mike Munchak is walking in the door for week 7 of the NFL season, that's not realistic.
No, you wouldn't find the Mike Munchak out there, but and you wouldn't have to fire Keith Carter in the season. But you can bring in advisors. You can have people from the outside help. That's what this offense needs, help.
It needs all the help it can get.
This is what I get tired of just in general with the Titans. The status quo. Hutton's right in that it's unacceptable just to say, well, the offensive line is bad, and I know that we got a lot of season left, but it's just not going to get any better. We just got to work around it and play with it. There are things you can do. There are efforts that can be made. Now, Paul, to what you're saying, there's no magic fix. You're not going to bring an advisor and everything's going to change, but it could help. And you got to do anything you can to help this team right now if you're management. And I'm so sick and tired of hearing about, well, you know, we just got to change some things. We really got to change things. We got to go back to work. We got to do this. I'm almost I almost feel good when they don't talk to the media. Like, I know that they didn't do an interview with Titans Radio yesterday, because I'd rather not hear from them at this point. Because the status quo, and this organization has been all about the status quo, just has not been working. And I don't know what the answer is, but it's got to be something different. You got to make an effort.
Yeah, and
you can't go out just not changing anything, right? I mean, they changed the quarterback yesterday, which was a good move. But you can't go out just saying, well, throw your hands in the air, and this is what we got, and we got to deal with it.
Changing out Deion Lewis, too, it looks like.
Though, Dawkins only got 5 snaps.
One was between the tackles.
I couldn't believe it when he was...
Let's hand it to Dalen Dawkins and run in between the tackles.
Well, I was thinking, is Derrick Henry hurt? Is my first question when that happened. And Deion Lewis.
Yeah, that's a Deion Lewis.
Any package involving Deion Lewis, throw it out of the playbook. The guy is not a good screen catch guy to get more yards. And not only that, every time that dude gets tackled, he looks like he's going to die. Like, you see how small he is on every hit. Is he ever moving forward? He's getting blown up every time he gets hit. Every tackle looks uncomfortable and awkward without him breaking a tackle.
That's a
disaster.
I feel like
in New England, he led the league in yards after contact.
Well, that is not the case here.
He was terrific.
Whatever the screen package is with him, let's go ahead and eliminate that from the offensive playbook.
When we come back, we'll talk more Mariota versus Tannehill. And I found a metric. Says Mariota was slightly better yesterday.
Midday 180 served up by Wendy's.
Looking, floats it downfield, and it is incomplete. No, it's intercepted! Intercepted by Byard! How did he catch it? 30, 40, 45, and down! I can't believe it! The ball hit off the back of Fant, and that's how Byard caught it! Byard's 15th career pick, and the Titans have a pulse!
You really, really got to admire the grit of this Titans defense. They've not backed off one bit. And as I said, they have had their heels on the edge of the cliff all day, and they just continue to bring it.
Yeah, our defense is playing outstanding. Week in and week out have, kept us in games, has really carried the load throughout the year. We are not pulling our weight as an offense, and we just have to find ways to improve and change that because, our defense is playing like hell.
Byard gets the pick. The Titans then punt. Brandon Haggerty tweeted out after that. He said, remember that 30 seconds of optimism after Byard's interception? That was fun.
They just say the same things over and over and over.
Yeah, they do.
The game's the same thing over and over and over.
Phone lines are open if you want to jump in, react to what was an awful day for the Titans yesterday in Denver. 615-737-1045. 737-1045.
So QBR is a metric that factors in kind of the importance of the situations. So I presume this is largely because Mariota wasn't in any important situations because they touched the Denver 49-yard line was the extent of their getting across midfield. So Ryan Tannehill, the 10th worst QBR of the season yesterday, 10.3. And Marcus Mariota, the 14th worst, 12.8.
Oh, man, it was rough. A rough day in Denver. A mess. And, Paul, you wrote this. To be clear, Vrabel and Arthur Smith have done the unthinkable, and they made the fan base wonder if they were too hard on Mike Mularkey and Terry Robiskie. Because we all point back to, okay, when was Marcus good? It was 2016 with Terry Robiskie as the offensive coordinator.
Well, I also
good think, in quotation marks because everybody wanted more than that.
I also think, and I plan on writing about this a little bit, what was our biggest, perhaps, objection to that offense was its stubbornness. And I don't know that they're being stubborn on offense here. They don't know what to do.
Well, I mean, I think you could look back and say they were probably being pretty practical and smart with Marcus Mariota, given evidence that we have now of him.
Still, there were no signs of development with Marcus Mariota there.
Well, what are the signs of development with this staff?
And there certainly aren't any now. Now is the regression.
Okay, then it's a Mariota problem?
Well, I don't think Marcus Mariota was cut out for this. Whoever.
Look, regardless of what you think about Mike Mularkey and Mike Vrabel and everything else, and whether you agreed with it at the time or your opinions change now with time, or you hated it at the time, whatever it may be. And there's people on both sides of it. I would say most Titans fans agreed with the move at the time to move in a different direction.
And no one's shocked by this
move. I also think most Titans fans agreed with the move because they believed that John Robinson had built a year-in, year-out playoff-caliber roster. And that is simply not the case. When John Robinson made that move, it was a bold move. You fired a guy who won a playoff game and was playing in New England in the next round of the playoffs. Not many coaches get fired after doing that. Now, I know there are extenuating circumstances with staff moves that were wanted, they wanted to be have made that weren't going to happen and all of that. But you're putting yourself out there when you make that move, and you're John Robinson. Paul, correct me if I'm wrong, but when you make that move, you are making a statement that second round of the playoffs is not good enough. I have built a roster or helped to build a roster that's better than that. When you go and hire a new coach and you're not getting those same or better results, it's you that's on the chopping block.
Absolutely. Put himself on the block.
Well, and if they were not saying that it's not good enough, they were saying this is the ceiling for the staff we have. That's also
exactly
what they're saying.
That's exactly what.
Well, what's the ceiling for this staff? Well,
that's the question right now. What's the ceiling for this team? 8-8.
You just look, and Paul, you wrote about it, but those first round misses for John Robinson, those kill an organization. It's great to get a Kevin Byard. It's good to get a Jayon Brown. Those help good organizations become great, to steal the line from the Titans. But what makes you a good organization is hitting more often than not with first-round picks. And the Titans have not done that enough under John Robinson.
I talked about stubborn, all right? So how many punts did the Titans field yesterday? A lot. I'm getting it in front of me. Punt returns. 3, 4, 5, 6. All right. Now, Humphreys only fielded 3. All right? I think we all prefer Humphreys to Jackson. But in a game like that, there's never a time where you're thinking of Humphreys is going to bust one. You're thinking of Humphreys getting 10 yards, right? What they need is a chance to bust one there that at least flips field position, right? Puts you in an advantageous situation. Now, it's not been a secret for some time now that Adoree Jackson can't do that. Has there been any effort to get a guy on the roster who could do that? No, zero effort. That's stubborn.
I mean, we can point to a number of issues. That one's pretty far down on my list right now, too.
No, I'm not saying it's a high. There's an example of stubborn, right? They draft the guy 19th. He's supposed to be your punt returner. He doesn't work out. You don't solve it.
615-737-1045, our number. Let's go to James. Hey, James.
Hey, guys. I have a question for you. A statement, then a question. Correct me if I'm wrong here. But other than Dean Pease, no one on this staff, or general manager for that matter, has ever been an NFL level where they're at now. First-time head coach, first-time offensive coordinator, first-time general manager. And it's all throughout the staff as far as I can tell. And is that the norm? I guess that's my question.
To not have a bunch of retreads?
Well, first-time general manager is pretty normal, the norm in this day and age.
Not a lot of retread GMs in the league.
Dorsey comes to mind as an exception.
And then you go and work on someone's staff.
There are examples, James, but not many.
Okay, but the whole staff other than just your defensive coordinator?
I think you're exaggerating a little bit, the whole staff. I mean, Tyrone McKenzie.
Well, he's saying like coordinator / coach. First time.
He's saying whole staff makes it sound like whole staff.
No, I'm saying they have been promoted, and this is the first time at their position. I looked through the bios and everything, and I think I'm accurate on that. So you go from tight ends coach to offensive coordinator. Okay, this is his first time as he's been on staff, but this is his first time as an NFL offensive coordinator.
All right, who else are you talking about?
I've been talking about the other, as far as I can tell, only Dean Pease has experience at the position he is at now. He is.
Well, Terrell Williams is the defensive line coach. He did it in Oakland, I believe. He came here from doing it in Miami. where he coached yeah. Ndamukong Suh. So you didn't look very hard if you couldn't find him.
Kerry Combs has a ton of experience coaching defensive backs.
And even if you don't have experience in your position.
Pat O'Hara coached quarterbacks in Houston, including Deshaun Watson.
Let's just stay with coordinator and GM. Even if you don't have a ton of experience at that particular position, you're allowed to perform well. Look at Green Bay.
Right, but what he's saying is not true. Rob Moore coached receivers in Buffalo and Oakland. I mean, a lot of these guys made parallel moves.
Yeah, but
there are a couple that were weird. Tony Dews, I think, was a weird one. Keith Carter, this is his first time coaching an offensive line by himself.
For the people that are in positions, if they were walking down the street, people would recognize the majority of those people are first time whatever. But that doesn't keep them from winning. I mean, the league is trending young at offensive coordinator, which means first time coordinator. Where you go get a veteran defensive coach. That's the trend across the league, not just here in Nashville.
Matt LaFleur was a first-time coordinator. Now he's a first-time head coach.
Right, with a first-time GM. So, yeah, again, you can go and have success doing that.
Well, but I will say, you see the value of Dean Pease in his experience.
Yes.
I mean, that's really showing up, and you see the lack of value or the lack of experience with Arthur Smith, who's learning on the job. We talked about this with a lot of college coaches that we cover, guys who are basically learning how to coach that position, whether it be a head coach or a coordinator, for the first time, and there's a learning curve. There's growth that happens. Arthur Smith should be better right now than he is, but he had to learn as he went. In doing this, we knew that going in.
There are leaders and then defined role players within the Titans defense, and everyone's comfortable in their role. I can't name a single player right now in Titans offense that's comfortable in their role or comfortable in the plan. There's no one.
AJ Brown, maybe.
No.
Wants more, but.
But it is so. I mean, again, this is a group that is just a flash in the pan at best week to week. I mean, he's had, what, 4 catches since Atlanta?
Yeah.
There's nothing, I'm with you. It's very uncomfortable. 737-1045 if you want to jump in.
All starts with the quarterback.
Which is why we can discuss when we come back. There should not be a discussion on who's starting this game against the Chargers.
These things are tough, no matter how you cut it. And I think the only thing that makes it somewhat tolerable is we do have a good relationship and we have a ton of respect for each other. I know I have a ton of respect for Marcus. So, yeah, it's a tough situation all the way around, but there's a lot of respect, I think, going both ways, so that helps.
I don't feel great. You know, Coach made a decision, and he's going to make a decision that's best for the team. So, you know, I respect it, and, you know, I just try to be there for Ryan.
He certainly wasn't happy. I don't want any of us weren't happy. You know, when we lose, nobody's happy, and we want guys that want to play.
There's been some discussion about if they go back to Marcus now, and I don't see why that would be in the decision-making process if I'm in the position to make that call. It's not like I have Luke Falk that came into the game in the fourth quarter yesterday, and it's someone who hasn't taken practice reps during a regular season and hasn't prepared for an opponent the way Ryan Tannehill has. And on the flip side of things, I have a defense that has allowed 13, 19, 20, 10, 14, and 16 points to begin the season. So I know my defense is going to hold the opponent to around 20 points per game, if not less. And I have a quarterback that, although we didn't put up any points when he entered the game, I have a quarterback that actually moved the football, and the receivers did seem to come to life some. They found some separation on some of these passes. Therefore, I'm going with the quarterback that's made 88 starts. I'm giving Ryan Tannehill an opportunity to take control of this offense, an offense that is doing nothing, and a decision that, let's face it, we've been discussing this for a couple of weeks now. It's not like it's been happening for a half. This is not 2 quarters of play. This offense has produced 7 points over the last 10 quarters. It's time to go with Tannehill.
He doubled Mariota's yardage in relative short order. And this is the second time that Mariota's had 60-some yards in the first half. He did the same thing in Jacksonville. You can't start this slowly. It's emblematic of what they're doing with the season, with the 2-4 start, when you start with the 63-yard passing first half, then you got to claw back. And this is not a team that's able to do that. This is not a team built to play from behind. This is not a team that has that. I'm with you. Like, you've done it, so now do it.
Yeah, there's not a decision to be made here.
There's no reason to go back and forth.
You got to go to Tannehill now.
They made the call.
Yeah.
Give him the practice rep. Well,
and he was better. I know that no points were produced, but the offense was better with Tannehill.
It wasn't hard to be better.
Right. And you can also ask, have they been calling games because they don't trust their quarterback in certain situations? The way they're calling games tells me that part of that is the issue. Some of these screen passes and quick throws, it's offensive line and quarterback play. Tannehill was sacked 4 times, by the way, when he came in. So I don't know if much can change from a play calling perspective because you can't trust your O-line, but maybe you get some more in the arsenal. And again, they did complete some passes, thankfully. We did see they had 100 yards of total offense on the final play of the third quarter.
Yards per pass attempt, I think Marcus was like 3. Tannehill was 9.
Johnny the Angry Poet has been waiting patiently. Hey, Johnny.
It was like trick or treat with no candy. A haunted house with no screams. Yesterday, I watched an NFL game which lacked any professional teams. I think I'd rather eat salad tossed in tobacco than watch Mariota, Tannehill, or Sleepy Joe Flacco. And a certain lineman, I don't want to sound bitter, but this nation already has enough big famous leaders who talk smack on Twitter. And if I hear Vrabel say again, from good to great, I'd rather have my wife come home and say, honey, I'm late. Yes. If we as fans were in battle, we'd all be yelling medic. Because that mile-high monstrosity was downright pathetic.
Thank you, Johnny.
Our resident poet at it again. Summing up the feelings of many.
Chris, thanks for waiting. Go right ahead.
Hey, guys. I'm just so disappointed with this team. Like, it's just, you look at this defense. This truly is a great defense that they have right now. Like, they haven't even given up more than 20 points all season. And it's really, it's just sad and disappointing when you have an offense that can't even somewhat complement that great defense. This team is going nowhere with this offense, and it's not going to get fixed with a quarterback change and everything. Like, maybe it might add a little spark or something, but as long as this offensive line is not blocking, it's not providing any protection, and the play calling is terrible, this team is going nowhere. Thank God.
Yeah, we agree. We agree with that. Ellison, what's up?
Hey, I'm doing pretty good, man. I went to the game yesterday. I live in Denver. I'm from Memphis. And, man, I just feel bad for Marcus. Let me tell you why. The reason why I feel bad for him, the reason why I'm behind his back is because he was taken number 2 overall. A lot of quarterbacks in the league that have been taken number 2 overall, the organization devotes themselves to him, to that person. They give him tools. Since Marcus been there, prior before he got drafted, they drafted 2 offensive players, and that's Taylor Lewan and Chance Womack. With that being said, he's only had 1 really tool for him to have as an offensive playmaker, and that's Corey Davis. I really don't believe in what Robinson is doing. I feel like the Vrabel and Robinson thing was a buddy-buddy situation. Man, I've been in the organization. I've worked with John Elway here in Denver for 3.5 years. I know how it goes when you want to hire your guys and when you want to believe in your guys. And when John Robinson and Mularkey did not have a good connection, I felt like he was just like, all right, I'm done with that. I want to hire my guy. And he hired Vrabel, and Vrabel has just been calling nothing but bad situations. And I think it all started off when he basically did not devote himself on the offense by basically getting
Rashard Evans, by getting Jeffrey Simmons. I think that we should have got somebody else that could have helped out the offense 10 times better, or got somebody else that's better on defense, like a Darius Leonard. I just feel like that this organization is all about a buddy-buddy situation. I feel like somebody needs to be held accountable, and it needs to be grateful. It doesn't need to be Marcus. Because Vrabel,
why does Marcus not take some accountability here? I don't understand where you're removing everything from Marcus.
Let me tell you why Marcus doesn't do this. Why Marcus needs a shot. Marcus needs a shot because, sir, the offense since Marcus been there has not done anything spectacular on the free agency to get Marcus help. Titans since I've been a Titans fan.
Hey, bud, let me interrupt you for a second. Does it matter what kind of offense you're running for a quarterback to be able to throw a screen pass? Keep in mind.
I mean, like, anybody.
Should any fifth-year quarterback in the league be able to throw a screen pass?
Anybody can throw a screen pass.
Rhetorical question. The answer is yes. You say every quarterback drafted second or around second has had an offense built around them. Does this list include Blake Bortles, Geno Smith, RG3, Mark Sanchez, Joey Harrington? Because those guys were all drafted around second. How was the huge offensive umbrella built around those guys?
That's the best person to compare to, Marcus.
Who?
What I do is I compare Marcus to a situation like a Phil Simms. Because I know football really well. Marcus has been through a lot of injuries because his offensive line hasn't been there. The organization has booted away a lot of key offensive players.
It's a terrible comparison because Phil Simms was a relative no-name from a small school, and Marcus Mariota won the Heisman Trophy.
Phil Simms also won Super Bowls.
Ellison, don't be a stranger because we can continue this discussion.
I'm really anxious to know about these teams formed around Bortles, Geno Smith, RG3, Sanchez, and Harrington.
Paul, before you leave, I got to get your thoughts on this tweet. This from Country Hard Hitter.
Oh, yeah, this is going to be my guy, I can tell.
I blame you guys and the writers on the Titans.
Yes.
Follow along.
I can't complete a screen.
You guys got us hyped up during the summer about Adam Humphries and the Mariota connection, Davis going up and getting the ball over defenders. Congrats. Y'all are why we feel like this now. And he put in parentheses, some sarcasm.
Well, I don't disagree that we hyped
up. They sell hope, and we buy it every year.
I bought in on this because I saw potential in all of it. That's what makes this season and this start so frustrating. And at 2-4, with the schedule they have coming up and the quarterbacks are going to be playing, the defense has been phenomenal. But eventually they're going to give up more than 20 points in a game.
Yeah.
And they don't deserve to be crushed when that happens. This offense has way too much talent to be the eye roll of the league right now. And that's what it is.
We also tell you what we see. Adam Humphries, and you guys saw less practice than I did, and I didn't see everything. Adam Humphries was unstoppable for some practices in terms of underneath stuff.
I don't think he dropped a pass yesterday on any ball thrown his way, for what it's worth.
No, but I mean, Adam Humphries is an incredible disappointment, and I think it's more their unwillingness to throw to him than it is him. He had a bad drop last week.
Yeah.
But do we think that they're fully maximizing Adam Humphries? I don't.
But who are they maximizing?
Nobody. So pick a guy and go maximize him.
Well, one on
Twitter. Let's create a pecking order and say, and make it a matchup by matchup, but say, this is a Corey Davis game. We're going to Corey Davis.
Stop focusing on plays and start focusing on players.
Like it.
Yeah, get after it.
Well said. Juan on Twitter says, Titans won't make changes on the line like benching Saffold because it's literally throwing J-Rob under the bus and saying, hey, bud, you got it wrong again.
Well, the other thing is, who do you – and I know Hutt's been a proponent of this. Who do you want to play instead of Roger Saffold? Jameel Douglas, when he played, was also getting destroyed. You're ready to go Conklin or Kelly.
I'm ready to go Kelly or Pomfield. I mean, it's one of those two coming up for me, if it doesn't improve.
I could see that.
I mean, we've been.
But I get what the guy's saying. You don't want John Robinson mistake admissions. But I will say this. And John Robinson's record hasn't been really good. John Robinson, though, has been pretty good at admitting mistakes. Now, when you guarantee a guy $19 million, you don't give up on him in six games. It's not the way the league works. It's just not. But he's given up on plenty of people he's brought in. Dalen Dawkins got a carry ahead of Deion Lewis yesterday. That's the beginning of giving up on that. Josh Klein got cut before his guaranteed money kicked in. That was giving up on that. They gave up on Kevin Dodd. They've given up on stuff. They haven't held on for dear life. You want a GM that held on for dear life? The Titans of Floyd Reese used to always say 98% of his draft picks are still on the roster, touting that as a thing. Well, you know how you make that a thing? You keep all your draft picks on the roster all the time.
At this time last year, the Titans were coming off of a terrible loss at Buffalo, and they were shut out at home right after week six to Baltimore and Joe Flacco's offense in a game where the Titans' offensive line, along with the quarterback, helped give up 11 sacks in a game. Yesterday, they allow 7 total. They benched their starter in the third quarter.
Think about that for a second. Denver more than doubled up its season total.
Yes. I would like to go back in the archives and listen to the conversation after those 2 weeks and compare it to what we have now, because I feel like I'm more frustrated watching this product now than I was at this time last year because of the health of this roster compared to last year and the changes that were made in the offseason to bolster the side of the football that needed the most help.
And the Good to Great campaign.
You brought up Deion Lewis, them going with Dalen Dawkins on the carry in favor of Deion Lewis. We saw that last year where they went with Flewellen in favor of Derrick Henry against the Patriots. And then we finally saw players take a turn both individually and as a group, as a unit. We may see that this year, but the problem now is their start has put them in a position where it may not really matter what happens over the full course of a season because of the spurts of really good play will be doubled up by really poor performances where they've now lost, what, 4 of their last 5? And the really point that everybody's pointing to Atlanta and Cleveland as reasons for optimism with the offense. We really only saw 2 quarters of offense in Atlanta and a 4th quarter in Cleveland. Right. That's all we've seen.
And they've got 4 weeks before the bye, right? The bye is a fix-it time for this team. The mini bye was good. 4 more weeks. You got to fix it without a bye.